with information on the latest developments in assistive technology and initiatives from the studios of 2RPH in Sydney. RPH Australia brings you AbleQuest. Hello, I'm Marnie Roper. In the last AbleQuest program, we introduced you to Professor Greg Teggart. We came across this accomplished octogenarian when he was recently named ACT Senior Australian of the Year 2016. He was commended for his work championing the concept of a user-centred network for various health technologies. Professor Teggart is a leading scientist and advocate for smart assistive technologies for the aged and disabled. He is adjunct professor at Victoria University and deputy chair of the Health Technology Forum at the Australian Academy of Technology and Engineering. He is very interested in this idea of converging technologies, how nanotechnology, biotechnology, information technology, and cognitive science could work together to produce new solutions. To continue the conversation about the findings of a recent research project he co-chaired, Barbara Sullivan asked Professor Teggart about involving GPs and the general area of telehealth.
Telehealth, there are some formal definitions. It's defined as a means for enhancing healthcare over a distance using telecommunications facilities. But it also overlaps with what's sometimes called telemedicine. But the telehealthcare approach is for people to monitor their vital signs at home, then have this data transmitted to a central base, analysed by people who look at it and decide if there are irregularities or indications of change, which might require a change in medication or might require somebody to go and to talk to the people themselves about what's happening and assist them. And so it's essentially been devised in terms of self-management of chronic diseases, and the whole field is changing from fixed sort of devices, as I was mentioning, the simple things, to more complicated things like this telehealth at home where you monitor your symptoms, send them in, and you get a response. In some cases, it's now possible to have a face-to-face conversation with the people themselves and put your questions to them. This is particularly important, of course, in remote locations for people have great difficulty in accessing their medical facilities and getting medical advice. But it is also very valuable in cases, particularly ageing in place, which, of course, about 90% of people want to stay in their own homes and age there. They don't want to go into retirement facilities. And while they can do that, this provides a way of them monitoring their own conditions and looking after their chronic care. And the indications are from all the tests that have been carried out in projects, that this is a very successful way of operating. And a number of companies around the country are operating on this now quite successfully. For example, one of the groups I work with is Feros Care, that come out of Coolangatta, and they have a very active program of this telehealth down the east coast of Australia. And more recently, HCF have just started a big pilot project, bigger than the pilot, 3,300 people around Australia involved in this, in testing out another set of instrumentations. The instrumentations cover things like blood pressure, temperature, pulse oximetry, oxygen in your blood, blood and glucose, and weight. And all of these are things that are then fed in and monitored over a period of time, and any change is watched. But the telemedicine has sort of been used also in the concept of thinking about how can these people in remote areas interact with consultants, and that's taking you into video conferencing,
right,
where people can consult with specialists and deal with problems at a distance, again, using rather sophisticated telecommunications technology.
How close are you to actually setting up a user-centred network for health technologies?
One of the things which we started up when we were talking about this idea of the groups of people, different disciplines coming together, I took a couple of groups overseas, one to Paris and one to Taiwan, of researchers who hadn't met one another, and we spent a week or so talking amongst ourselves and to other people in these places. And it became clear that there was a lot of interaction that could occur that was not occurring simply because people were not aware of what was happening and how they could interact with other people to develop these sort of technologies. And so we've built up a sort of a network out of the academy of people around Australia of like interest. And we were trying to formalise this into a more of a structure where we could see the need for getting people together, particularly with the focus being on the patient themselves and not just on the devices, as I was talking earlier.
Yes.
And so we tried this, but the academy is not quite the place to set up a body of this type. We've had difficulty in thinking about how we financed it. But in fact, in a way, we've almost been overtaken by events, because the way in which the health system is changing towards consumer-directed care in the ageing area and towards the National Disability Insurance Scheme, which is focusing again on the issues of the customer being the person who defines what sort of treatments they want. In a way, things have moved towards what we were hoping to get, but of course it hasn't moved far enough, I think. But we see happening around the country, local groups are developing in this way. For example, in South Australia, there's a strong move towards a smart assistive technology collaborative, which is pulling together people from a range of disciplines, again with the customer as the focus, linked into advanced manufacturing in South Australia as a replacement for their automobile industry. So that sort of thing is happening, and South Australia is being very active in this. And then the other states are thinking about this too, and I have some ideas of what some things we might do in the ACT in this year while I've got this title.
Right.
But I can see this as a very interesting area for developing products which we need and which we will need increasingly as the aged population increases in Australia, but also the opportunity to build up export industry, because this is a worldwide phenomenon of aging populations.
Well, clearly the work that you've been doing all these years has been a big driver to get people talking. And a lot of it's, I guess, originally the conversation, and now it's all starting to have a more practical outcome. So,
yes, the medical device area and medical instrument area is quite a large industry, and the potential as we move towards mobile devices, and that's really the very interesting thing that's happening now. We've moved from these quite simple devices to these more complicated systems with telehealth and telemedicine, which were focused on aging in place, but required you to be at your home to take the measurements. Now there are mobile wearable devices coming out of everywhere that enable you to take these measurements wherever you are and feed them through your mobile phone back to the base for monitoring.
And these are done automatically.
You take a drop of blood and put it on a small microchip, hook it up to your mobile phone and send back your glucose readings. So all these sort of things can all be done now at a distance. These wearable devices, of course, now can have GPSs in them. They can assist dementia patients who are wandering, assist the carers to know where they are, put boundaries on where they're moving to. You can build better alarm alerting systems for falling with small accelerometers in these mobile devices. So when people fall, irrespective, they don't have to press a button. An automatic signal comes out to say that they've changed position at a very significant rate. And their position is known, so people can go quite rapidly to them and find them. So all this is happening, and it's extremely exciting, and I think that all of those are going to really revolutionise the whole way in which we look at these assistive devices. That's what excites me about remaining in the business and the opportunities, I think, for Australia. We've got extremely bright people in all these advanced fields, and we just need to get our act together better in putting them together. But we can see it happening, but it happens slowly. They're disruptive technologies because they are changing the existing patterns. And they change the existing patterns of healthcare, and people don't like that. But it's happening, and you can't be King Canute and turn back the waves.
And it was ever thus. Many disruptive technologies happening at the moment that are unsettling industries. Well, I saw in the report, the Assistive Technologies for Independent Living, an underlying statistic that supports everything that you're doing, which was that 4.3 million Australians live with severe and profound disability, which is a staggering number.
This was researched by a number of us together with the secretariat from the Academy who looked and checked all the data. So figures there, assume, are correct.
Yes, but I guess what I'm saying is it's vital. If that number are living with severe and profound disability, and I guess that includes the ageing who are immobile, for example.
One of the issues in this, of course, is that I see all these technologies as being essentially dual-use technology for the disabled at all ages, but of course particularly for the aged, where the problems are often more acute and resulting from chronic diseases, whereas in many of the younger people, it's resulting from accidents or traumas. In fact, one of the projects we looked at was one from Victoria, where the Transport Accident Commission, together with Monash University and WorkCare Australia, had put together essentially a small village for people who had been traumatised, paraplegic in car accidents. And they're mostly young men, still very intelligent, of course, and seeking to use their abilities. So they're at one end of the spectrum where they are anxious to get out and use their abilities in some way. And so they appreciate the things that technology can do for them.
And are quick at taking it up.
At the other end, of course, there are the elderly people who are very old people, over 85, who are rather slower, and not in any derogatory way, but I mean, they haven't had the technology background, and they're not happy often with what's happening. And so they require quite a different approach, but in a way I see technologies extending over this. They may have to be modified for those two ends of the spectrum. But unfortunately, I think the disability insurance people pick it up and say, well, we finish at 65 and that's ours. Disability is there.
Yes.
But disability goes on beyond that. But in fact, consumer-directed care, I think, has to go through the whole age range.
Mm.
There are some issues associated with the way in which authorities look at these and also the way in which they're financed. And that's a pretty critical issue in the whole structure as to how you build financial models which satisfy all the parties involved in these exercises. The government would like to get healthcare costs down. People don't want to pay any more for their healthcare. Insurance companies want to be careful about how they spend their money. And we really do need to think very carefully about the whole financial structure of the system in terms of the way we use these technologies.
Well, Professor Taggart, if everyone were still as curious and as enthusiastic and as focused as you were at your age, Australia would continue to be a very, very strong and vibrant country.
Well, I think old people are an underutilised resource, and I am against ageism.
Hear, hear.
Completely. It is one of my bêtes noires, and I hold very strong views about that, and I just don't think we as a country are really geared to deal with our old people and to deal with the increased numbers of old people that will be now upon us. Did I say before, there's 3.5 million now under 65,
yes.
There'll be 6 million by 2030, of whom there'll be about three times as many as the very old people. And I don't think we're really thinking well about these changes which are descending on us with great rapidity.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I've Professor enjoyed Taggart. Talking with you.
You have just been listening to AbleQuest, a program that looks at developments in assistive technology. From Barbara Sullivan and Marnie Roper, thank you for listening and goodbye till next program.